Accession number 31425, Mr. Mick Gagan, Real 13. Now, the next thing we want to do, you know, is to look back at your sport, you know, because although you were on active service, there's quite a lot of sport while you're out in Malaya, you know, one way and another. If you'd like to go through, I mean, we've done a bit about you being a PTI, but tell us about the importance of sport and what you did.
Well, the thing was, where we were in Kuala Lumpur, you had an airstrip which was... It was made out off the field and everything like that, and it had been bulldozed by the Royal Engineers and flattened right out. So I made portable goalposts, and whenever people wasn't doing anything, and sometimes you wouldn't have flying, you might have an hour or two flying of a day, but mostly in the evenings, we'd always have a football match. Kick about or anything, you know, and you could do it. The officers, they used to join in everything just to keep the fellas from, to get them fit mostly, because in Malaya you're losing a lot of energy and everything like this. And also it would be a case of boredom just in the same camp. And it was a big camp. And we used to get matches up practically every night. You'd find people out there playing football, anything like that. And then we'd go and play the Chinese in other sports fields. They've got their own sports fields all around. And also the Malayans. And then we'd have a sports day. If the local communities were or a big have a sports day, they'd always invite the army to join them, especially in the relays or running, anything like that. And we'd organise it so that we've got someone in there, because life is all out there was all about competition and things like this. Also, we used to play not just us, we'd play rugby down in the Padang by the old railway station in Kuala Lumpur, and sometimes there'd be one regiment playing another regiment and things like this. And it was very good. And you'd go and join in. And if you was playing rugby, we had one chap, he was excellent. His name was Steve Roberts from up by Woodness Way. And he used to play rugby before he came in the army. And he used to play. And it used to be a good team spirit amongst everybody, with the officers and everything. And then afterwards, don't matter what rank you were, you'd all have a beer. Everyone would be amicable. And it was excellent. And also, there was a swimming pool in a hotel in Kuala Lumpur, a nice size swimming pool. And they used to invite, they'd let us use it perhaps 1 or 2 hours a day. And we'd take some of the fellas from our unit, and then another day some fellas would go from another unit. And they had some diving boards in there. And some of our lads really got used to swimming. But where we were lucky, just where near our place was, there was a big tin mine. And when the tin mines, when they're taking everything out, and especially the old tin mines, what had been worked for years and years, they'd leave them. And there'd be a nice big lake. And we'd all go swimming there. There was even the locals had even built small jetties out, and there was a couple of little rowing boats on there to have a little bit of fun with. And we was invited to go there. We had free hand wherever we was in Kuala Lumpur. It was a local community. It wasn't, you know, nothing to do with the communists, but they would make us welcome or anything, and we could go out there. So we was like swimming, rugby, football, anything. And the national game was in Malaya was badminton. And you'd find them, some of the Malayas, any old kampong village, you'd always see a net up, and they used to be there every night, you know, keeping fit and everything like that. So badminton or volleyball, they all had the nets. And we used to go and sometimes play them at badminton. There used to be a little Milan village not far from us, and we'd go and play badminton and everything like that. So it was very good, you know, no problems.
Now, what about the boxing? That's the main one. Well, what
the boxing? The boxing. We was right next door to the Milan police depot in Princess Road, and perhaps 1 or 2 hours a night, I'd go there. All of my own accord. I wasn't detailed, but I used to go there and take the Malayan police on physical training and also boxing and things, anything to get them fit as well. And a lot of these Malayans, they'd never had anything, but they come from these villages and that. So this was a new thing for them. And I even built an assault course out of logs and everything like this. And the police superintendent in charge, he used to welcome me with open arms. I used to, of course, getting these people fit and everything like that. And especially if I built something like a small tower and they had to come down on a rope where they'd never done anything like this before, it gave them confidence. A lot of them was absolutely useless at it. I've seen one fella slide down and burn all his hands. But we used to do that, and the boxing, I used to go over there and take them on boxing training. And also, in the camp where we were, I managed to get a small ring put up there as well, where we used to do a bit of training for the lads as anyone. A lot of them are going just for a bit of fun. But, you know, if they was going in for any competitions, then I'd make sure that they're fit before they went in.
Now tell me about your competition, because you did very well, didn't you?
Yes, I did very well. I won many competitions what we went in. I mean, some were, like, you may get the different regiments, and if you're one regiment against another one, and different weights, you start out from light to heavy. And I did very well as a middleweight. I was light middleweight, and I did very well. And then I reached the finals of the All Malayan Championships, and I fought in that. And but 3 days before I was due to box, I was out on operations, and I hadn't had much to eat and everything like that. But I managed to go the whole three rounds in the final, and I got beaten on points. It was even on the Malayan radio. They even gave it out on the radio. And although I lost in the finals, they were going down to fight in the Far East Championships and the Happy World Stadium in Singapore. And they asked me if I'd go down there, and as well as a reserve, in case the fellow what had won, Sergeant Roberts of the Guards, and if he wasn't fit, then I'd step in and take his place. But he was fit on that night, and they got me a competition, and I fought the champion of Ceylon, the coloured chap. He was the middleweight boxing champion of Ceylon, but he was in the army in Malaya, but he also fought in the championships as well for his country. And I fought him, and he was the champion. And in the second round, I knocked him out. But mostly, it wasn't on the head what I knocked him out with, it was in the stomach, because he had the hardest head you could ever have, but he couldn't stand it in the stomach. And he got one into the solar plexus, and he was out. So
now you beat Sergeant Roberts in a friendly match, didn't you,
yeah,
later on?
Yeah, a few months after, you know. So it was good competitions in those days.
What was the boxing match like? Do you remember how it was all set up and what it was like?
Well, in those days, you didn't have a referee in the ring. They were all on the outside of the ring. There was the judges, timekeepers and everything. And you'd go in. So if you're hitting anyone, sometimes people are jumping out the seconds and stop the fight. The referee wouldn't be allowed, he wasn't in the ring until a long while after, when they brought in different ruling and everything like that. And it was a really stiff competition, because you've got fellas from all walks of life, all the backgrounds, and some, I think some, have been more or less boxing long before they got there. You know, you could even get a professional in there, and you wouldn't know, because you wouldn't know whether he's a professional boxer or not. And this did happen a couple of times. But all
that would be a big crowd.
Oh, in the Chinese Assembly Hall in Kuala Lumpur, I've been there, and it was a really big hall, and I was boxing in there. And also, a big contingent of the Malayan police heard that I was boxing in there that night, and I should take them on training and boxing, and they all turned up as well. Besides, and this was a different competition, and my officers said that if I win, they'll take me out for a meal after, which was very unusual. So I made sure I won, and I went with decent clothes on, so I could go out with them after, and I won. And one of them, he said to me, he said, "Cool," he said, "you cost us money winning." But it was all in good fun, you know. And I think that the main sports what we had, though, nearly every night was football, because you'd all have, everyone would be having a kick about, don't matter who they were. Used to love it, because rather than just sitting about in the barracks, it was like your bashers or anything like that, you'd go out, and even if they wasn't playing football, they'd be out there watching. And if you get in a rugby team, and also on the sports ground, on the field, I take your fellas on physical training. Different people, and the RSM of the camp, he was in the Royal Signals, and he had actually fought one of the Turpin brothers. And he was a good advocate of keeping fit. And he said to me, "I want the men fit." And I used to take them whenever I could. You might get an hour in the morning or anything, and I'd get them on that pitch and give them a good house training. And I also had some trees to give them log training, log exercises. And sometimes, if they was a bit lazy, which a lot of them didn't worry about, instead of 8 on a log, I'd put 6 on a log. And then they've got to work extra hard to lift that log up. And at the end, I'd have them put it all in, and then the whole length of the pitch, I'd have something cut, a post at the end, and they'd have to run round it. And I should say, "Right, I want you all round that post, and the last one back here, I've got jobs for you to do." I said, and you should see them move up there then. Everyone used to run, because if they come back, they'd have a job to do. But, you know, it was so they wouldn't worry about that.
And you carried on these sporting activities even when you went to 16 Battery, 26 Field?
Yeah, not so much.
Not so much.
No, because there wasn't the facilities there what we had in the Air OP.
Now, so what happened next? You weren't with 16 Battery that long before they moved. They left Malaya, really.
Well, we went down to, they were leaving Malaya.
So you were at Tanglin Barracks to the end, were you?
Tanglin Barracks, they were, we was there right till the end, and then we had to go down by truck, the whole regiment. We had to go down to Selarang Barracks. We had to go down to Selarang Barracks in Singapore, next to Changi. And in Selarang Barracks, they had a nice swimming pool. They had a nice swimming pool, and we could go there any time we liked swimming. And then they got the swimming. We was going to be there for a good while, a good few weeks. So with the help of the RSM Emery, who was a good swimmer, and a lot of us, we all joined in, and we formed we got up a competition from different batteries and everything like this. And it wasn't just from the batteries, it was for the regiment. And we had to work out what we wanted, like diving, crawl, backstroke, plate diving, everything. And we sat down for hours and hours, and we did work out a nice program so that before we left, we had a really great swimming competition in the barracks. And practically the whole regiment was there looking, and also the brigadier from the headquarters, and it was a really good competition.
Now, when did you go to Selleringe Barracks? Do you know, or do you not? Or when did you leave Selleringe Barracks? When did you leave Malaya altogether?
I think that must have been about February 51.
So you were only with 16th Battery about 3 months before you.
Well, the whole regiment was moving from Selleringe. The whole regiment was moving to.
So that's what I mean. But you were only with them about 3 months before they moved.
Before they moved to, before they left Malaya.
Yeah. Okay. So, tell me about what was the preparations for the move? It's quite a big thing, a regiment moving.
Well.
The thing
was, we all had to take our arms and everything like this, but also. They were going to get big guns. They were going to get 25 pounders, which they hadn't never had before. So, and a lot of the fellows there hadn't even done any training on guns or anything like this. And on the troop ship coming home.
Now, which troop ship were you on?
I forget the name of it. It could have been the Halliday. Something, Hallidale.
Empire Hallidale.
Empire Hallidale, I think it was. And we were coming back, and I was taking the fellas, who were signallers. I was still trying to give them briefing on outlines of batteries and regimental signalling and things like that. And we coming on there, and of course, a lot of them had to have inoculations, more inoculations, and things like this, and everything was fine. We came back going at Colombo and coming right the way through the Suez Canal, and everything was fine until we got to Port Said. But about 2 weeks before that, a troop ship had gone through, and I think it was with the Sea Force and everything like that. And there was, because the at that time, the Egyptians was against the British and things like this. They even took a couple of people in and shot them and everything like that, British troops. So there was not much liking of the British troops when we went through Suez Canal. And after being on the ship all that time, they let you go ashore at Port Said, and they wasn't ashore very long before the Egyptians started sorting the troops out, and the troops retaliated and everything like that.
Were you involved at all? Did you go ashore?
Yes.
What do you remember of it?
Well, we were just walking through, and some people, Egyptians, come out of shops and everything. All the English pigs and everything like that started throwing things. So we was making our way back to the boat, and then a few of them all come up and started on a few of the lads, and fight started. There was fighting all over, and then a lot of them was all gone ashore. Of course, being British, they didn't just stay in there and let things happen. They're all joined, you know. And then when we come back, we managed to get back to the docks. The RSM, he said, right, you come over here, when we wondered what was happening. But what happened, he got about two dozen of us together, those what could handle themselves, sort of thing. And we had to go around the streets looking to see if there was any of our stragglers. And And the military police, they were all out and everything. Now, the Egyptians didn't pick on the military police because they were there permanent. But anyone going through, they seemed to pick on you. And we went back all around the town with the RSM and everything. And we did find a couple of people. And on this troop ship, there had been some married families coming back and things like that, and they had just gone ashore, and we found one woman and her husband really beaten up, and that was in the RAF, they was really beaten up badly. You know, just laying in the ground of the woman, all her face battered and everything. And I think in the melee, a couple of the Egyptians had got killed at different points. And when we got to, we all went back on the boat, and then we went to Tripoli.
Is that where you were? That was your destination, was it?
Yeah, it was to Tripoli. That was the nearest docks. And from there, we went to Homs, H-O-M-S, place, I think it was about 160 kilometres from Tripoli. And
when, and this was February or March?
I can't remember exactly, you know, when it was. I was there for about 3 months before I came home, you know, in the August, or the beginning of August.
So more like May then?
Something, yeah. And when we got there, because we had got a bad name that it was us, but we had been picked on the same as the ship before us. And when we got there, the brigadier come, there was a brigadier, he came, and he said about all the fighting and everything like that. And as we said, we had to defend ourselves. We didn't go ashore fighting. It was, we was picked on the same as a ship before us. But everyone, we all got, I think it was 56 days confined to barracks. Well, there was nothing there. There was no town or nothing outside the barracks. Nowhere at all. So being confined to barracks didn't mean a thing to us. And we was right on the edge, across the road from the barracks was the beach. And in Homs itself, there was a big water shortage. And the water would be on for 40 minutes in the morning and 40 minutes at night. Now that means that the whole regiment has got to wash and shave in 40 minutes. So what fellas used to do, get a little cans or something and get the water and go back to the, you know, so everyone could do it, have it, and you don't get a can of water beforehand, and sometimes the water would run out, it might not be enough water in that 40 minutes. And I was talking to the RSM once, and what happened, we hadn't been there long and we had a fella drowned. And he was the ambulance driver from the Royal Army Service Corps. And he had gone swimming on his own. And it was such a strong undercurrent in the beach there that he got drowned. And he went missing. And I'd been the swimmer I was, the RSM. He was a decent bloke. And he said, we'll have to do something about it. And then 3 days later, he got a call, the camp got a call. This fella's body had been washed up down the coast on a fishing boat, a small fishing boat. And the RSM, myself, and another chap, we went down there to identify the body. And that is when I got the shock of my life, when we found the body, because he had a swimming costume on, or pair of trunks, but all his eyes and his lips and his ears had been eaten away by crabs, because they take the fleshy parts. And the fella who was with us, he just fainted, and the RSM and myself, we just covered the body up, and we had put it on a stretcher, because we had taken a 1500 weight truck, put it on a stretcher with the help of these Italian fishermen, and put it on a truck, and it was brought back to camp. And then someone, the medical corps, someone came and took the body away for burial. But that was, and from there, we formed a beach party, which I was in charge of, if anyone went swimming, no one was allowed in swimming unless there was a member of us there from the beach party, because the undercurrent was so bad it'd drag you under. You couldn't stand up. You just drag straight under. And different things like that, you know. And
now, what were the barracks like at Homs?
The barracks was, there was like a tiled floor. They were long huts, just single stories. Where the sand, you could never get them clean. You could never get them, not what you call clean. You could wash the floors and everything, because whatever you done, the sand was there. They were built in. It was built in the desert, so everywhere outside the room itself was sand and things like this. But it was, you know, not there wasn't much to do. And we used to go out on schemes.
So what training schemes?
On training schemes.
And what were these training exercises like?
They'd got some guns, and then they was trying to teach the fellas the guns, and they'd go down, and then they'd go through different roads, like of kind of a wadi or something in the desert, and to give them extra training, you'd go off into the sand so that the guns got stuck, and then you've got to really work to get the guns out. And
these are 25 pounders.
25 pounders.
Not self-propelled 25.
No. These were 25 pounders with the limber and the quad, which would tow them, and different things like that, you know. But on, you know, it was very hard for some of the fellas, and a lot of the fellas who'd been out in Malaya, they were leaving. They were going to leave the regiment in the next couple of months, and they wasn't all that worried about learning that they were going to get demobbed, so they wasn't worried about learning the guns, you know what I mean? So different things, but one thing what did stand out in my mind, the first week we were there, they've got and the nearest bank to get the wages for the boys was in Tripoli, and the RSM said he'd like me to go down and been there a couple of weeks. And we had to go and get some wages. And we had to go right back to Tripoli to get them. And the RSM and a major was going down. And I was detailed to take them. But it wasn't in a truck. I had to take them in a brain gun carrier. Because we didn't know what would happen. We were going to carry a hell of a lot of money. So we had four armed guards in the brain gun carrier, the officer, the RSM, and myself as the driver. So we had to go to a bank in Tripoli, and I drove right up to the door, and the fellas was there with, there was two with Sten guns and two with rifles, and the officer and the RSM, they both had revolvers. And I had a gun as well, which was parked at the side of me, in case we had got ambushed or anything for the money, because anything could happen in those days. So that was what we did. But all the soldiers what were there, all the people before, they all had sand-coloured uniforms on, and we all had jungle green. We hadn't been issued with our khaki ones at the time, and everyone's looking at us in the green uniforms. And passing on our way to Tripoli, we had to pass a big RAF drone and a camp, and they were all outside, and as we went by, they're all shouting out, and all in the jovial manner, like, you know. And I can always remember one fellow, he says, "You haven't got the khaki uniforms on," he said, "have you all gone mouldy?" This was an American, like, you know. And we're shouting out, "You got any gun, fella?" You know, it was good fun. Of course, we had to slow down as we went past this camp on the main road, along the main coast roads, going along to Tripoli.